You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Final hour on this Thursday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. Glad to have you on board. Say hello to Chat Row, those watching on Peacock, our TV partner, and those listening on our radio affiliates, numbering nearly 400 cities around America. Fox Sports Radio lineup as well. Jazz roll the Lakers. We'll talk to Tim Legler from the Mothership on the rise of the Jazz, the fall of the Lakers. No updates on Tiger Woods, still in the hospital. If we get any information in the next 60 minutes, we'll certainly bring that to your attention. Got a poll question today. McLevin, do you want to update that?
Okay, if you're J.J. Watt, would you sign for the Chiefs or the Bucks for $7.5 million or a team like the Titans or the Packers for $15 million? 78% say the $7.5 million and the true contender like the Chiefs.
All right.
There's some rumblings over here that we stir it up a little bit.
Okay.
Go with the poll, the question of the day. What's better, Kansas City barbecue or Houston barbecue? Are we just going to make people mad?
Probably so, but Nick Wright started this. We had him last hour at this time, and he said that Houston barbecue was fraudulent, and he's all in on Kansas City barbecue. I'm more of a Memphis guy. I've had Kansas City. I've had Houston. Memphis just stood out as something different. And, you know, Kansas City was great. I thought Houston was good. I didn't have any problem with that. Kansas City was special, but I thought Memphis was different. Yes, Paulie?
I'd like to weigh in on this because I think that clarification is in order. Kansas City has a style of barbecue and lots of great barbecue restaurants. They have a style. Houston doesn't necessarily have its own unique style of barbecue, but they also have great Texas barbecue restaurants all over the place. Went to a bunch of them. I think that's the differentiation here, that they're not, Houston's not known as a barbecue city, even though they have great barbecue restaurants.
Right, I don't know if we cleared anything up there.
Oh, yeah, we cleared.
We did?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, McClellan.
Do people get more territorial about food that their town is known for or their home teams? Because I feel like Philly people and cheesesteaks go insane. I know they go insane over the Eagles, but like if you like say anything bad about our cheesesteaks, we take it so personally.
All I know is whenever Seton brings up In-N-Out Burger, he certainly hears from those in Los Angeles.
The best.
Because you think In-N-Out Burger is
overrated. Sorry, Five Guys is just a superior burger. I'm sorry.
It's, wow.
It's just a fact. That is crazy talk.
These are facts. I can't.
Yes, McClub.
What about that beans and ketchup guy that they call Skyline Chili? What's
Oh, so you're going into Cincinnati? Is that what you're
I
doing?
I don't know. I don't even know. You're not the biggest Skyline Chili
fan.
Yeah,
I don't
either.
Care. Yeah, you know, White Castles and Gold Star and Skyline Chili, that's what I grew up with. All right, you want to criticize it? Go ahead. I don't care.
I'll tell you one thing that I don't like. Deep dish pizza.
Now you're trolling Paulie.
He's calling everybody that way now.
Yeah.
Go ahead and get some Coney Island hot dogs while you're there.
Hey,
Todd will get
upset.
Don't
even think about it.
Yeah, Paulie.
People are very defensive in their hometown food to the point where they have no wiggle room. Mel Kiper is from Maryland, and I used to work with Mel. We once went to a restaurant. We were down south somewhere, and I ordered crab cakes. He goes, "You should be embarrassed." He goes, "You should never order crab cakes outside of the state of Maryland." Hmm. And he was dead serious. He goes, "You should be embarrassed, Paul." And he thinks they're the only good ones. Some people think that the only good barbecue is their barbecue or pizza. People think New York pizza, whatever.
Well, I will say New Haven pizza is the best pizza in the world. Well, I'll say in America, because I'm going to guess that, you know, our Naples affiliate in Italy, that they'd probably be upset about that. Yes, McLean.
You see, I flared up with anger because I think Brooklyn's right there. I think they're 1A and 1B.
In pizza?
Yeah, Brooklyn is more famous than New Haven nationally. People come to Brooklyn on these tour buses to eat pizza.
Why else would they, everywhere you go, they like to call it New York pizza because New York has the best pizza. No one ever says New Haven pizza. They don't have a sign like that in North Dakota or Cleveland.
Todd,
come check out our New Haven style pizza.
Todd, if you weren't from New York, would you be saying that?
I think I would. After testing and tasting New York pizza, I don't think there's a close second. Not Chicago, not any of these. New Haven,
yeah,
Connecticut.
You say Sparrow has great pizza.
I know, so they have great pizza. It's convenient and it's good. I actually like the
I can't trust you with Italian food.
New York has more bad pizza than good pizza. They've got great pizza places, but they've got some places that put out stuff that is left for hours out on a counter with flies running around.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oh, yeah.
But it, you know, at 1:30 in the morning, it probably looks pretty good. Yes, McClellan.
I want to defend my back row partner here. Mm. If Sbarro was so bad, why would there be so many of them? Clearly, it's probably, there's millions. It must be somebody
got out
it.
Of business a long time ago, you would think.
Is that your logic?
I'm sort of half joking
okay.
about it.
Okay.
But there must be something to Sbarro. How do they have they survived all these years? I used to be in the mall eating Sbarro in, you know, the late 80s.
There's a lot of fast food restaurants.
Yeah.
That have been open for decades. Yes, Eaton.
That's a very pop music take from Andrew.
Yeah.
Like, well, everybody likes it, so it can't be bad, which that is the opposite of him. He's exactly, if everybody likes it, it's the worst.
I wouldn't order Sbarro's if you put a gun to my head, but yeah, of course.
What was the logic on McLovin coming up with pop music?
Pop, nobody likes why, it because it's too
why
popular.
Why is pop music so popular?
Yeah.
And I said, well, it pop music is short for popular.
It's a little Yogi Berra. This place is too crowded. Nobody goes there anymore.
Paulie, see if you can get a barbecue expert on the show.
On it.
Well, you know what? Chad at Traeger is a barbecue expert.
Can Chad be objective?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if he wants to go out on a limb.
I know a couple of barbecue journalists, which, what a job.
Barbecue journalist. All right, welcome to the show, already in progress, as you can tell. Been an interesting week for Tom Brady. The Bucs GM Jason Light said that the team would consider signing him to an extension. Then a report came out that Brady is going to need more than cleanup surgery on his knee and might be out a little bit more. He turns 44 in August. And look, this is uncharted territory. You've had guys like Vinny Testaverde and Warren Moon. They made it that far. George Blanda, Hall of Famer, lasted till he was 48, but he was a backup quarterback with the Raiders, but he was their full-time kicker. They're not elite like Brady. And he strolled into Tampa Bay, no preseason, and led them to the Super Bowl. So it's easy to take for granted how difficult a task it really was. I think it's his best accomplishment in his career. What he did in Tampa, doing it during the pandemic, you know, trying to get to know this team with a new coach in the NFC, and he ends up winning the Super Bowl. But, you know, the real issue in the offseason for Tampa Bay is the personnel issues. Those are the real challenges. But would I bet against Tom Brady? I would not. But when it comes to how long he wants to play, and I was in there with probably the majority when Brady said, I want to play till I'm 45. And I thought, okay, 45? He can't play till he's 45. I wondered if anybody would want him at that age. And now Tampa Bay is looking at an extension. Who's on the phone, Paulie?
Chad, the smoke master from Traeger, is on the phone. He just got off a flight and knows this is an emergency.
All right, Chad Ward from Traeger, our good buddy. Nick Wright was on from Fox Sports First Things First, and he said that Houston barbecue was fraudulent. Kansas City has the best barbecue. Chad, you are a champion grill master. Would you like to weigh in on the barbecue discussion?
That's a very strong take. I think Paulie would agree with me. We're both big fans of Ronnie Killian's, which is right there in Houston. There's some really good Houston barbecue. Kansas City, don't get me wrong, they're right there kind of, you know, they may be first, but I don't think you can call it fraudulent at all. So that's my opinion.
Okay.
Maybe a 1A, 1B type situation, Dan.
Okay, where's Memphis get in there with the barbecue?
For me personally, I got to put it behind Houston and Kansas City. I mean, they've got good pork. I'm not a huge dry rib fan, which is what they're known for. But I think as far as quality of joints, I would even put definitely Austin probably ahead of Houston and Memphis in that ranking.
What makes Kansas City barbecue the best barbecue?
It's just, for me, Kansas City is one of those places. One, it's the home of the burnt end, which is one of my favorite, you know, cuts to enjoy. And there's just so many good ones. There's Q39, there's Oklahoma Joe's, there's Slaps. There's just a plethora. You could go to 8-10 joints and all of them be some of the best barbecue anybody's ate. So I think it's just a plethora of barbecue places and just their style with, you know, being heavy on the burnt ends.
What is the common mistake that people make with barbecue?
Common mistake people make with barbecue is they usually don't pay enough attention to internal temperature. They want to base everything off of time, oh, it'll be done in 5 hours. Whereas to me, that's one of those things where every animal's kind of lived a different life. Some meats are tougher, more tender, more marbled than others. So a good instant read thermometer and cooking to a set finish temperature is something I don't feel like enough people starting out do, and they get frustrated.
Chad, thanks for joining us on this very important topic. We apologize for interrupting your busy schedule. That is Chad from Traeger, who is a champion grill master. Thank you, Chad. All right. Well, glad we tracked down Chad. Chad knows his barbecue.
Better not go to Memphis anytime soon.
Yeah. And Austin moves up there. Chad just landed in Dallas. He didn't say anything about Dallas barbecue there. Although, what's the steakhouse we went to in Dallas?
I don't remember. There's a place in Dallas called the Pecan Lodge, and it's in this kind of big building, and they open, and the line starts, and they just keep serving until you run out. But they do a thing where you get a plate for four, a platter for four people. The Pecan Lodge was legit.
But there's a steakhouse in Dallas, and it's the two people's names. Like, it's not like, Paulie, we went there.
Yeah, not Nick and Rich's. Hold on.
All I know is that was the real deal. Wolfgang's, when we went to Wolfgang's in Soho.
That was good.
Oh,
that's a good spot.
That one was, that's one of those where you go, this is spectacular. Yeah, Paulie.
I think it was Nick and Sam's in Dallas.
Yes, that's it.
And I can remember because the waitress says, we have a special tonight. It's a Kobe beef steak. We only have it a couple times a year. You're like, yeah, that's good. And she was just about to say the price.
Hey, I wasn't picking up the check.
It was the best.
Yes. He goes, well, we don't have it this very often, but I saw it take it. Yeah.
You're pinching me under the table. Yeah. Like, I'm getting it.
Yes. Those are good days.
Yeah, they were.
They weren't the salad days. They were the steak days.
Oh, man.
Good days.
Yeah. Our salad days included steak. We don't have those anymore. It's basically my credit card. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, the two words, Golden Corral is where I speak.
Ponderosa.
Did you guys go to those places?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I thought that's what steak was. Understand that my seafood was Mrs. Paul's fish sticks growing up, that I'd never had shrimp cocktail, calamari, any of that, clams. I had Mrs. Paul's fish sticks. Yeah, see.
Like 20 years ago, maybe, my buddy had moved to New York City, and I had never been to a nice restaurant or like steakhouse or anything. And before that, no offense to them, but my parents had always cooked them, and they kind of liked their steak well done, you know? Mm-hmm. And so my buddy takes me to Smith and Walensky's, and he's just like, dude, I got it. I'm going to order. I'm like, okay, cool. So we're there hanging out, and they brought out two steaks, and they were still on the like sizzle plate. They were sizzling, and there was butter on them, and I was like, what? What is this? This is a steak? It blew my mind. I had no idea that it could be like that.
Didn't we go with the executives of DirecTV to Smith and Walensky's?
Oh, yeah.
And somebody ordered
chicken. Lemon chicken. No. Lemon pepper chicken?
I did it as a joke because it was this super tense table. You were in the middle of a big negotiation. And like everyone was sort of being macho type A executive types. And I asked the waiter, I'm like, tell me about the lemon pepper chicken.
I never knew you did that on purpose.
Oh, yeah. I love steak. I would never order lemon pepper chicken. But you know those things on the menu? It's like, I've seen you order salmon at a steakhouse, I think. Haven't you done that before?
Maybe with your salad before the steak.
I'll do a surf and turf.
But I don't think, it's not just where you grew up. I don't think seafood was a big thing 30 years ago. I think it's really blown up. Like, people didn't know about
it. No, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I know my family couldn't afford it.
But were rich people eating seafood back in
I have no idea because I didn't go where rich people were eating. None of us would know like where the rich people were eating or what they were eating. We didn't belong to a country club. Yeah, see.
I once went to a diner in New Jersey with my grandparents when I was young. I was, I don't know, 10 years old, maybe 12 or something. And I ordered scallops at a diner, which is kind of weird to do.
That's dangerous.
And I just remember my grandmother being like, oh, money bags show. Okay. Oh, you paying for your day? You're getting a cheeseburger. Okay. Sorry, Grandma.
Or I'm always amazed when lobster is on the menu at a diner. There's something wrong with that picture. Where I don't know how long that guy has been in the tank there.
I think, I think I'll have the lobster.
Of all the things. But have you gone into a diner and the menu is immense? Like, it's crazy how big a menu is at a diner.
There is a thought that the more items, the less good it is. You know, if it's four pages, it's not good one
all
page.
I know is, hey, 7 in the morning, veal parmesan. Yeah, I'm thinking about it. And you're going, who does that?
It happens.
I know it does.
No, it doesn't. People order that?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes your 7 a.m. started 7 a.m. yesterday. And your clock's a little off. And yeah, a 7 a.m. veal parm, let's go.
Yes, we love it.
But don't you have to wonder about preparation of said veal parm? Like, where are they pulling this veal parm out of on a 30-page menu?
But I don't know how you can have all of that food be made, you know, in a diner. You know, you would think that the specialty would be, this is what we do, and we do this really well. You go into a diner, and I'm always amazed, or like a Cheesecake Factory, where it's pages after pages. Like it's a binder of all these things on the menu, and I go, how do they have this ready to go?
And it's every possible thing and combination you can think of. Gee.
Yeah, I know. Pretty crazy. Rich in California. Hi, Rich. What do you have for me today?
Some credibility. I have a junior at Dayton, Ohio, so University of Dayton. But I wanted to shout out for the Santa Maria barbecue. It should be ranked in at least the top two or three.
Oh.
So
Santa Maria, so, California barbecue.
Correct.
Okay.
Not bad.
Let me check on that. Paulie, check on Santa Maria.
It must be niche because I didn't know that Santa Maria was a hotbed of barbecue activity.
Niche.
I will look into it.
Phenomenal.
All right. Well, thank you, Rich. I should reach out to Guy Fieri, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. See what he has to say about
Triple D.
That. Yeah, Triple D. Yeah, he probably has a list there. All right. Let me take a break here. Tim Legler will join us on loan from the mothership. And I have some interesting numbers this season on three-point shooting, college and the NBA. And Legler's one of the great deep shooters in NBA history. So Legs will appreciate these numbers coming up. But is this just sort of the normal downtime the teams have or a lull? And that's what the Lakers are going through right now? Or is there a bigger picture that he sees? So we'll talk to Tim Legler. He'll join us coming up next here, 18 after the hour, Dan Patrick Show. All of this food, and I'm thinking about getting a Built Bar. What do you think, Todd?
I'm all in. I don't know where you're going to find them since I've got them all in the house.
Well, there's a couple of boxes out there. They're not full boxes.
I don't know how much longer they're going to be there, so if you got the urge, you better go grab one.
Do you know that I have a camera on every room?
Oh, I knew you had some cameras. Is it really everywhere, though?
Everywhere.
So like, you could see someone like putting Built Bars in their bag or something like
that.
And, like, leaving
even the back
facility.
Room guys. The back room guys are sneaky because they'll walk by, and they know there's a camera on in the mail room, and they'll actually try to hide behind the camera.
I saw one throw like a towel or a sweatshirt or something over it and then just grab a box.
That, I believe you're lying there.
That's something I do.
BuiltBar.com, promo code DP20, get 20% off your first order. There's mint brownie, there's cookies and cream, coconut, salted caramel, and their protein bars. High protein, low sugar, low calorie. Incredible. BuiltBar.com, promo code DP20 to get 20% off. BuiltBar.com, and tell them we sent you. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. I got some numbers here before I get to one of the great deep shooters in NBA history and Tim Legler on loan from the mothership. In the NBA this season, the overall three-point shooting percentage just under 37%, 31% of all made field goals are three-pointers. In college basketball, Division I, the overall three-point shooting percentage just under 34%, 29% of all made field goals are three-pointers. And I watch college basketball. It's tough to watch because there's no, you know, the player to watch in college basketball. There's a lot of talent, but man, this is starting out in like fifth grade and sixth grade where everybody thinks they're a deep shooter. Everybody. And it's the Steph Curry effect. Steph Curry's probably had a bigger impact on the game than any other player in history. Because you want to be like Mike? Nobody could be like Mike. but it feels like everybody can try to be like Steph Curry. And as a result, you got guys shooting threes who have no business shooting threes. Tim Legler had business shooting threes, and Legs joins us now. What advice would you give these shooters now, or maybe the coaches now, these kids who are coming up in grade school and high school that all think that's how you get to the next level by being a three-point shooter?
Yeah, Dan, that's a big challenge because you're right. I mean, this is what the NBA looks like now. I think for me, and I was a three-point shooter, that's how I made my living. It's a little monotonous for me to watch basketball now because it seems like that's the intent of every possession, to get a three-point shot. And it was used a lot differently, obviously, when I played this different era. But the problem is this is actually filtered all the way down to the youth level, certainly AAU level. Go watch an AAU tournament one weekend and sit there and you know, watch 6-8 games on the court in front of you, pull up a chair, and just take a look at what's going on. You're 100% right. There's a lot of guys taking that shot because they've been empowered to do it because people are telling everybody, the analytics say, that's the way to play basketball now. And there's too many guys, to me, that have the ultimate green light that don't deserve it. That's what I see when I watch basketball now.
But I was wondering about this with Magic Johnson. Magic couldn't shoot when he first came out of Michigan State. I mean, he could run an offense. He was great, wonderful passer. I wonder how the NBA would treat him if he was just coming out and he couldn't shoot the three. Or, you know, there's probably, you know, 10, 20, 30 players that you can think of that how would we view them now if they were coming out? Jason Kidd couldn't shoot. He became a good three-point shooter, but how do you think basketball would have treated, you know, legend Hall of Famers like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, you're talking about guys now at the very top of the food chain, right? So you're talking about Magic, the most unique weapon in the history of the game at that position. 6'9", powerful, playing downhill. Yeah, you know, no three-point shot, but I think people would look at him as a weapon that you can use to set up three-point shooters if he was coming into the league now. Because when you combine, you know, his ability to rebound at that position, his ability to guard bigger guys, because the league now is set up that way that you want a 4 or 5 man that can switch out and guard guards. That's what he would be.
Yeah, but Ben Simmons is
a guy like that.
But Ben Simmons, Legs. But Ben Simmons is a great defender. He can get to the hoop. He's a good passer. He just can't shoot deep. And, you know, we go, how can he be an all-star? So
it's a very valid point, as particularly when you look at Ben Simmons, because you look at him and people are still, and I'm in the Philadelphia area still. I live here. So this is the team that I follow, that most of my conversations with my friends and people around here are about the Sixers, and specifically usually about Ben Simmons. I've kind of given up on that thought that AK's going to add this. It's just not going to happen. This is what he is. And we're always going to view him as a guy, as a result, that's lacking this one skill that a perimeter player needs in the NBA now, which is the ability to beat you from anywhere on the floor. Like, you can't get to superstar status in today's game unless you have that. So I think that's a very valid point about Magic. The one thing about Magic that I will say, I think he's the type of guy that could probably add it, adapt to it a little bit better than Ben Simmons certainly has been willing to even compromise at all. I mean, he's actually regressed in terms of his willingness to look at that shot from 15 feet, much less the three-point line.
Could you help Lonzo Ball? I'm not saying fix. Could you help Ben Simmons? Maybe not fix?
No question in my mind. I know that these guys, they've spent money. The teams have spent money. All these guys now have shooting coaches they work out with in the summer. There's no question. I've done it. I've not done it with a guy at that level in the NBA, but I've done it with countless players. And it's a process that you go through. And I think there is just, if you can get a guy to focus on two or three things, and I think there's about maybe literally 10 to 12 things that I could talk about ad nauseum, what goes into it, the mechanics of it, but you can't overwhelm a guy, because what's going to happen if you give someone too much, they're going to end up not having success early. And they're going to go right back to their old habits because that's where they're comfortable. So you've got to break it down to two or three things, and each guy's different. It might be something different with that particular player. And I do think there's a way to break through that barrier mentally and get them to buy into two or three things from a mechanic standpoint and help guys. I don't think there's any question about it. I can sit, look, it's the one thing I've been good at in my life is doing that. And I know how to teach it. I know how to communicate it in a way that maybe they've never heard before. So yeah, I'm confident that I could do something like that.
And I was always taught that you start about 3 feet out from the basket, just underneath, and get your form, and then back up, make, you know, 10 in a row, make 10 in a row, 10 in a row, 10 in a row, get to the free throw line, make 10 in a row, and then you get to the top of the key. And that's the progression. Just get your form, get the feel, get the release, and then you can kind of build up your confidence. But, you know, you watch Lonzo Ball. He runs away from shooting free throws at the end of a game. He's got a wide open three. How did he get to that point in his career?
Well, I will give him credit because when he came into the league, I had never seen any player shoot a basketball the way that he did. A right-handed player releasing the ball from his left eye socket. I had never seen anything like it. And as a result, he's a guy with great vision. He's a good defender. So he has all these skills that help you win. But that was a big problem. And I said, well, there's no way he can ever shoot a mid-range shot. How can you shoot a shot going to your right, your strong hand, have to stop and bring the ball back to the area where the defender is chasing you from? Can't happen. And as a result, he never really takes a mid-range shot. Now, I will give him credit. His stroke and release, it's night and day from when he came into the league. He's now at least a viable three-point shooter. He's a threat from out there, and you play against with Zion and Brandon Ingram. You're going to have to do it. He's at it. I give him a lot of credit. He put the work in. Very few guys that have had that much success to that point in their life would be willing to put the time in. And I think that's where Ben Simmons, I think you can absolutely critique him. It's not important enough to him. So I will give Lonzo Ball credit that he's gotten it to that point. How he ever got a stroke that looked like that in the first place, that's beyond me. I don't know how anybody along the way didn't stop that at a very young age and say, wait a second, what is this? You're the only person on earth who's ever shot a basketball that way.
But Kevin Durant does start on the left side and brings it over. Now,
that's different.
It's not as pronounced. It's not like a windshield wiper with Lonzo Ball. But, you know, Durant, I always tell people that, you know, like a golf swing, don't look at everything until the point of impact.
Right.
Like, where are you with club and the ball? And it's the same thing when you shoot. However you get there, what does it look like when you end up releasing the shot?
And it's a great point.
And Durant ends up in perfect position. He may not start, but he ends up in a perfect position.
He absolutely does, and you're right. And guys are going to get it there differently. And also, I will say to younger players, those aren't necessarily the guys you want to emulate. Like for instance, Dirk Nowitzki is one of the greatest shooters in NBA history. I would never advise a player that I was working with to shoot the ball with a 24-foot arc. I mean, the distance that Dirk Nowitzki's ball travels from his fingertip to the rim may be the greatest of any player in history that was a good shooter. That means there's far less margin for error because of the distance he's traveling. But he's a freak. Kevin Durant is a freak. So what I want to try to do with guys is, look, regardless of what feels comfortable to you, how you're getting it up there, bottom line is, by the time you get to just before release, it should look the same with everybody if you are going to be a really good shooter. I think one of the things that I've noticed with players, they have a really difficult time getting the ball to transfer from, you know, their entire hand to their fingertips before the release. And that's a big problem that guys just never seem to be able to break through. They also have a hard time, Dan, having their wrist and elbow lock at exactly the same time. Some guys never get to full extension, like Zion Williamson would be a great example of that. And he can make an occasional three, but can you imagine if he ever felt comfortable taking that shot with the amount of distance that people have to give him because he's so explosive? I don't know he's going to get there because he doesn't extend his left arm. Ben Simmons is the same way. Yeah. His wrist never makes it to this position. So there are little things, and look, part of it is the player. How much repetition are you willing to put into this?
He's Tim Legler, ESPN NBA analyst. Yeah, I don't know if you knew this, but we had Ray Allen in the studio. This was, a couple of years ago. And Ray had the ball on the palm of his hand. He was just holding it, and I corrected him. I said, Ray. and his look, I don't know why I did it, Tim, but I did. Here's maybe the greatest shooter, one of the greatest shooters. I mean, it's like critiquing Warren Buffett on investment portfolio. And I said, Ray, you got the ball on your palm of your hand. And I was always taught you don't have the ball in the palm of your hand. Was I wrong to critique Ray Allen?
No. In the context that would be a great segment, that's hilarious. But a guy like that, like for me, he was the greatest shooter that I had ever seen for probably about a decade until Steph Curry came along. I mean, Steph Curry's taken the art of shooting to a level I'm not sure will ever be replicated, honestly. He's a once-in-a-lifetime player. I do think there's a generation of players that Steph Curry has helped. And I know the concept of the game, maybe, and philosophically, offensively, it's hurt some levels and some teams and some players. It's also helped guys, because there's a whole lot of kids out there that looked at a guy that's 6'4", slightly built, not a lot of muscle definition, and he simply made himself this good through skill repetition. Because I think Steph Curry might be the greatest combination of the three skill elements of the game, pass, dribble, shoot, that we've ever seen. I think he is the highest combination of those three things, and it was simply done through repetition. And he didn't have to be a physical freak to do it. So I think that gives some kids actual hope, and it makes them go work on their game a little bit harder, which is a good thing.
Are you all in on the Jazz as far as being an NBA title contender?
100%. This is not something that's a great story or a great start. I'm watching them deep dive every night. Again, last night, perfect example. Here's what they do differently than anybody else. And I do compare them to the Warriors a little bit. When we first that splashed on the scene, we'd never really seen that kind of ball movement, player movement, quick, decisive reads and actions, and then ending up in the hands of a great shooter. Now, they don't have Steph and Clay on their team, but they've got a stable of guys that can do it, but the mentality is exactly the same. Everything is quick and decisive. It's all based off a high ball screen, a dive by Gobert or Favors, and now we're just going to get you to react to that, because if you know, they're going to score at the rim, and now we've got super high IQ players. The ball is going to start hopping around a perimeter. We're always going to make the extra pass, and you're not going to catch up to the basketball. And it's a beautiful thing to watch, because for me, that's what great offense looks like. I know we were talking about the three-point shot and the heavy reliance on it. Well, when you get looks that good, you should play that way, because they're making 18 of these things a night. And you think about the Warriors, Dan, when Steph first splashed on the scene, we thought that was the greatest shooting team we'd ever seen. They were making 13 a night. This team is making 18 a game. Yeah. That's how different this is. So, yes. And the other thing is they defend. This isn't a one-trick pony where they've got to outscore you. They will defend on nights where they're not shooting well. And I think they're a legit title contender, absolutely. Would not be shocked to see them, say, beat the Clippers in the second round if it ends up that way, and end up with the Lakers in the conference final.
Okay, talk Laker fans off the ledge.
Well, look, here's the thing. You have, obviously, you're missing AD and Schroeder. That's enormous. But here's the other thing. They're a defending champion. Go back through history. Defending champions, you get to midseason, there's typically going to be a foot off the gas a little bit mentality, because the freshness of the season is in your rearview mirror. And they were tired because they had a short turnaround, but the adrenaline of a new year gets you going. That's gone. The playoffs are too far away. It's cold as hell anywhere you go right now to play. That's a downer. The skies are gray. You're in a rut. You're also shorthanded. It's the perfect time mentally for them to sort of be going through the motions a little bit, and that's what I see in this team. There is absolutely nothing to worry about as long as Anthony Davis comes back healthy and stays back healthy. This team is going to the NBA Finals. Utah might have something to say about that. So I'm not as definitive on that as I was before the year. I made a joke when they added Harrell and Schroeder. Let's just make it a 10-game season and play the finals, because nobody can beat that team. I don't feel as definitive about that now because of the Jazz particularly. But still, if you've got AD and you've got that kind of versatility with LeBron and AD, and they're so unique in the problems they cause for you on both ends, for me, it's still the Lakers, so nothing to worry about. It's typical midseason doldrums for a defending champion that's shorthanded.
Legs, great to catch up with you again. We appreciate your time as always.
Always great, Dan. Talk to you soon.
That's Tim Legler from the Mothership. We'll take a break. We got some really interesting news regarding Russell Wilson. Big news. I have that for you next. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Just saw this story on the Athletic website. McLevin just brought it to my attention. Russell Wilson's camp, this according to Pro Football Focus, has approached the Seahawks about a potential trade. Now, let me give you a couple of key lines in this article by The Athletic. And this started on our show when Russ came in and he was the NFL Man of the Year. And I just started talking to him about the number of times he's been sacked. And then all of a sudden, he opened the door. I said, do you have impact? Do you want input? And he goes, well, I don't, but I'd like. And then all of a sudden, it opened the door, and then we started talking. And then we had a source who then was listening to that interview who got in touch with us and said, hey, what Russ is saying is this relationship is not sustainable, that this won't continue this way. And I thought, okay. And then it kind of turned the NFL on its ear because then people thought, well, is Russ available now? What is he saying? Here is one of the key paragraphs in the article in The Athletic. Before the Thursday night game against Arizona, Wilson met with his coaches. For some time, Wilson has sought, even pushed, for influence within the organization regarding scheme and personnel. In the meeting, he outlined his own ideas for how to fix the offense. His suggestions were dismissed, multiple sources told The Athletic. Another reminder to Wilson that the Seahawks did not see him the same way he saw himself, as a player who had earned greater control over his situation, his future, his legacy. Russell Wilson stormed out of the room. That is just part of the article here. And I don't know if Russ wants out, but according to Pro Football Focus, Russell Wilson's camp has approached the Seahawks for a potential trade. And then they go on to say potential destinations, including Dolphins, Jets, Saints, and Raiders. I don't know if they're reporting anything. You know, when this started, when Russ was on our show and I wondered if he wanted out, the first team I brought up to the Danettes was the Raiders. Because I thought, all right, Russ, his wife Sierra, they could be, you know, the face of Vegas there. And John Gruden always loves the quarterback he doesn't have. You could get Russell Wilson in there. We've always thought that, you know, Derek Carr, he's the quarterback now with the Raiders, but not necessarily for the future. I don't know if any of this comes to fruition, but I do think that there was a backstory that Russ had with Seattle. I think that's why Seattle was upset, according to my source, that Russ went public with this. He tried to do it privately. He tried to have input. And I was not given a heads up. I had no prior knowledge of Russ not having any input. And the reason why I brought it up, I was not tipped off in any way that, hey, if you ask Russ, he's going to tell you this. What I brought up, and I was trying to connect the dots, is Russell Wilson was with his wife and the commissioner at the Super Bowl, and he's being honored for the NFL Man of the Year, and he's watching Tom Brady in front of him. So Tom Brady is the GOAT, and then you got Patrick Mahomes, who is the future, and Russ is going, what am I doing? I haven't been to a conference title game in 7 years. And I think he saw the NFL moving past him. I mean, when you think about it, you know, we talk about quarterbacks. Now, I thought Russ was going to be the MVP last year, and he started out that way. And then something happened during the season. It felt like they relied on the home run ball. Pete Carroll still loves to run the football, play great defense, all of those things. They don't have the Legion of Boom anymore, and they don't have Marshawn Lynch. And I always thought that they relied on Russell to kind of, hey, all else fails, just ask Russ to win the game for us. But I was wondering if he's watching Tom Brady. Tom Brady leaves New England, goes to Tampa, and then brings in some players, Gronk, Leonard Fournette, Antonio Brown, and Russ is probably going, why is it I can't have that same kind of power? I'm younger than Tom. I'm a decade younger than Tom. I should be able to have that kind of input. Now, that's prior to the interview that we did, that he was having these concerns or issues with the Seahawks. And now you have this. Whatever was going on, and then my source who followed up was correct because I had people questioning that. Like, oh, where's that coming from? The source that told me that was not affiliated with Russ or the Seahawks. It was somebody who said, hey, this is real. This relationship is not sustainable in its current form. Well, I didn't know what was happening prior to. And now we know there was a whole lot more going on with Russ and the Seahawks. Yeah, McLovin.
Yeah, they talk a lot about the interview with you in here. There's two paragraphs that talk about you as being a result of the Super Bowl. That Monday he came on and expressed his frustration. But the other teams came from Jason LaConfora that week, too, that he said the Raiders, Dolphins, Saints, and Jets were among them. So this story didn't break that aspect of it. I guess LaConfora had wrote a column and speculated that. I don't know how sourced it was.
Well, you might have just gauged interest there. But, you know, I thought after hearing Russ, and then we thought, gosh, could he get traded? And I was wondering, could he get traded? And what about the Raiders? You know, if the Jets are in there, the Dolphins in there, okay.
Saints sort of makes sense.
Yeah, the
too.
Saints, I still feel like the Saints and Sean Payton waiting for for Drew Brees to retire, that I wouldn't rule out Sean Payton doing something, whether it's Russell Wilson or somebody else. But it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Yeah, Paul.
Miami Dolphins have a lot of picks. They have a young quarterback on a rookie contract that they're not sold on. That seems like a destination that Russ and Mrs. Russ would like.
Yeah.
Generally a good franchise?
Yeah.
Competitive franchise year to year.
Yeah. But you're not even the best team in your own division. Well, I mean, I look at them now. They're the third best team in their division, probably, behind the Rams and Niners. That's interesting. Paulie's already got tomorrow's poll question ready today. That's how efficient we are. That's how... That's how researched we are, prepared. Who will be traded before next season? Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, both neither. All right. Sure, why not? Yeah, McLovin.
There's another part in here that you've talked about before, that the Seahawks looked at Josh Allen and Mahomes in the drafts.
They loved Josh Allen. I have that on great authority. They love Josh Allen. And I think that could they have done something, they would have done something with Josh Allen. I don't know how they could have made that happen. I'm just saying. I think if you gave Seattle a do-over, they would have tried to have traded Russ and then taken Josh Allen. Yes, he'd.
I think Russell Wilson ends up a Saint.
Oh, he is a Saint in our eyes.
In more than one way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Drew Brees retires. They're like, Russ.
Russ, come on down. Yeah, Paul.
Is it my birthday? We talked barbecue, J.J. Watt, and Russell Wilson. Is there a Rush album dropping anytime soon? Is Walter Payton back?
If only
Pam
changed...
Anderson.
Yeah, Pam Anderson.
Whoa.
I love her.
If only Russell Wilson would change his first name to Rush Wilson.
Give me a second.
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson Jr. III. What We Learned, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. They go far beyond... customization options, cutting-edge tech, five-star sales service support crew, Mercedes-Benz vans, build-equipped engineers to be ready for anything. Go the extra mile. Take the all-important first step into an authorized dealership today. Thanks for joining us. Do it again tomorrow. Seton Pauly, Fritz and McLovin, yours truly, Dan Patrick Show. But wait, there's one more item I forgot, and it's ZipRecruiter. The best teams start with the best talent, but you got to find the best talent. That's the challenge. When it comes to hiring for your business, you're looking for the best talent. Well, why not have ZipRecruiter help you? Because they are the best at doing that. And everything from healthcare to manufacturing to business services. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. When you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. One click. And then ZipRecruiter has matching technology, scans thousands of resumes. And what I love is it's so effective. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through that site within the very first day. ZipRecruiter sends them an email from you. You stand out from the competition. If you're really interested in that candidate, they will know it. Try ZipRecruiter for free. My listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. ZipRecruiter.com/Patrick. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.